Blog Talk Radio.
There is a conspiracy in the land.
It's a conspiracy to wipe out the black community as a whole.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to log in, load up, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself in swag while sitting on your sofa sipping Ace of Spades, watching messages from the local sponsors, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Scheinberg administration during an uncut broadcast of Schindler's List. It won't consist of Instagram pics posted by Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and Ben Jealous eating dinner together at the juice bar on 125th Street, showing off their current situation. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by New Nigger Cinema, and it will not star Nene or Flavor Flav, Cicely Tyson, or Tyler Perry. The revolution will not give you street cred. The revolution will not correct erectile dysfunction. The revolution will not make you an American Idol, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Muhammad popping champagne at your going away to prison party, because you got caught by every camera in the neighborhood kicking that dog and robbing that old lady. CNN will not choose the dumbest eyewitness in the crowd to give a concise description of just what happened. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Gwyneth Paltrow being run out of Harlem on a Vespa with a brand new weave. There will be no slow motion or ass shots of Buffy the Body gyrating on a rented Rolls Royce with a wet black power t-shirt that she had been saving for just the proper occasion. Real Housewives, Olivia and French, and the Kardashians will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if niggas are making it rain in puddles of sorrow, because black people will be in the streets looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no YouTube clips of parrots singing the national anthem, or Sweet Brown screaming she ain't got time for that. The theme song will not be written by Kanye West or DJ Khaled, nor will it be sung by 2 Chainz, Nicki Minaj, Taylor Swift, or Trinidad James. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a flash flood, flash fire, or flash mob. You will not have to worry about the gecko in your glove compartment, the tapeworm in your gas tank, or the Trojan man in your back pocket. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not spray on a darker complexion. The revolution will give you wings. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution won't be on demand, brother. The revolution will be live.
Logical
actual, natural, universal order of things. That's what we've got to understand. I call myself, you call yourself, or somebody calls self, I really don't, African-American. But are you really an African-American?
No,
let's focus on that at the African Poetry Theater. You're not an African-American.
Right.
How can you wear the X on your cap, the X on your sweatshirt, the X on your chest, and say that Malcolm is an example for you, and walk around and call yourself an African-American?
Black power, black power, and more black power to my people. It's your brother, soldier in arms and comrade in battle, Sean Castro Kweli, reporting in from the hells and smells of North America and broadcasting live. Of course, we're here a little bit after 8:30 on the east side and a little bit after 5:30 on the west side. And we're glad to be able to talk to you live once again Monday night. The Cubs of College Black Power radio broadcast. And we come to you in the name of the bold black man who is 100% black man, unrelenting, unflinching, and unyielding with our enemies and our oppressor, the devil. Talking about the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. We're thankful for our beginnings in 1989 under Brother Aaron Michaels. We're thankful for our attorney at war and attorney general of the black nation, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we're thankful for our bold national chairman, who we'll hear from in a few minutes, the general minister, Hashim Nzinga. And of course, I'm your national chief of staff, and coming over these airwaves as we do week after week and month after month, we always want to give you something to charge your black power battery, to keep you focused throughout the week, and to keep the struggle alive. We give thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers, who answers to many different names. We're thankful to our ancestors, and we're thankful to be in this struggle for the liberation and salvation of the black nation. We are in a post-transatlantic situation. A post-transatlantic situation, what that means is that from the boats onto the shores of the hells and smells of North America, in fighting our people's enslavement, now instead of the physical plantation, sharecropping, pulling tobacco, pulling cotton and all of that, now you're on an elevator plantation. Instead of the physical plantation, cotton fields and tobacco fields, we're now with elevator plantations. The racism that we faced, where our people were being hung from trees and called nigger, now was institutionalized and shown in the courts, in the faces of courthouses, in the faces of judges and prosecutors and attorneys, in the faces of law enforcement agencies, and in the faces of different sectors of this society. So I don't want you all to come to this broadcast and think that much has changed, or that we are in such a miraculous condition that you can fantasize your way out of this. No, sir, no, ma'am. This situation has degraded to something technological, to where now the incarceration, the enslavement that your forefathers and foremothers went through, and our forefathers and foremothers faced, now is in technicolor. And so we say, like the great Gil Scott Heron, the revolution will not be televised. Revolution, according to the Black Power General, means complete constructive change. I know some of you have different ideas of what it means, and you see these movies and you see these documentaries and these TV shows, and you get all kind of fanciful ideas of what the revolution means. For black people in the hells and smells of North America, it has to mean nothing less than complete constructive change. There has to be a change in property relation, in economic relation, in social relation, in political relation, in moral relation, in all other aspects of society. In every single sector of society, we find in most cases the blacks on the bottom and the whites on the top, or the rich on the top. In most cases, generally, this the change. Black people cannot be a permanent or the permanent underclass in America and throughout the world. This is a systematic effort that comes from the highest levels of society to keep our people under the boot heel. So we got to get up, and we're getting up, and we're taking the steps. The first steps that we are taking is a strategic move to encounter every neighborhood and ghetto, quote unquote, and communal existence in our reality, meaning we have this national movement to combat violence against black people, and that means that we intend to come face to face with every single scourge, every single parasite, every single negativity, every single ill that affects black people. Every single thing that we know we have to change, and that we know politicians won't change, we know civic leaders won't change, we know pimping ass preachers won't change, everything that we know we have to fix, we have to fix. And we have to do this through organization. We can't listen to abracadabra and poofs and huffs and puffs of smokes and all of this. Can't listen to that. None of that will change our reality. You can't pay attention to these people talking about big old hands are going to come down from the sky and crush the devil and do this and do that and all this magician stuff that you'll find at Disney World. All this stuff that King James and his translators would later translate to confuse Africans and make us better slaves. You can't pay that attention. All this stuff that the Arabs used at one point, colonize and enslave Africans and mistreat Africans. You can't pay attention to that. You have to look at this from a black theology perspective. If you're going to read scripture, it has to be from a black theology perspective. It has to be from the perspective of the liberation and salvation of black people. It has to be from the perspective of the oppressed fighting back and getting the boot heel of their oppressors off of their necks, or our necks. And so we're the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. First and foremost, send you greetings of black power. Greetings from all of our National Central Committee, all of our regional offices, every single member, all of our chapters, and internationally. We send you greetings, and we're glad that we are able to struggle forward in this time and to kind of open some eyes, because unfortunately there's a lot of us that are fast asleep. In 2016, you're hoping that Hillary Clinton gets in. You're hoping that Hillary gets in because this Donald Trump looks so monstrous that you're hoping that you can select the lesser of two evils. And what we will educate you on as we go forward with this national movement to combat violence is political violence. We will teach you about political violence and how political violence is used to pressure black people, how political aggression and political violence and political games are used to pressure black people and put us in corners which we should not be in. And this lesser of two evils, this lesser of two evils choice really is no choice at all. See, if you are a righteous individual, a righteous thinking man and woman, You don't choose lesser of two evils. That's like choosing Satan or Beelzebub, right? That's like choosing pork chop or ham hock. You don't choose the lesser of two evils. Why? Because it's the same thing. Evil is evil, no matter how you slice it, okay? And so this two-party system, this two-party electoral process, or I should say selectorial process more properly, but this alleged electoral process really is a game to get black people involved on choosing their next oppressor, so that no matter how oppressive and repressive the individual is, or the individual who operates within the function of the society in that office, that they'll say, well, you chose him, you voted for her, you picked this person, when all along this individual and these individuals normally are chosen by what's called super PACs. They're chosen by, you know, those who have the most money. The corporate, the corporations, you know, the millionaires, the billionaires, that's who normally chooses who will run this country. And so I don't want you to be fooled as we properly educate you according to our program and give you a proper education that exposes this decadent American society. We don't want you to be fooled in thinking that just because you cast your vote and go behind a glorified shower curtain, that all of the problems of black life and black community will be magically erased. We thought that. Many of us, if you're honest, thought that with President Barack Hussein Obama. You thought that when this black man got in the White House, all the problems of black people were supposed to be over. And theoretically, that may have been true. But what you got a forefront taste of was something that, if you read in our program, our 10-point program, where we talk about neocolonialism, you got a full front neocolonialism, which is white power in black face, meaning that he's not a free man. He has bosses. He has people he answers to that control him and that guide the moves that he makes, right? So it's white power in black face. That's white power in the White House in black face. That's neocolonialism. Same thing that runs Africa right now, where these African rulers, leaders, presidents, and whatnot, black on the outside, African by heritage, but they're 100% controlled by external forces, which is why Africa is not free. So we're not free in Africa, and we're not free in America. And so that's why the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad said that in the new Black Panther Party, we would have to be revolutionary pan-African nationalists. Let me say that again. He said we would have to be revolutionary pan-African nationalists. Now, some of you say, well, how are you going to be both? How are you going to be a pan-African and a nationalist? The Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad said, how can you not be both in the hells and smells of North America after all the hell that we have caught? For those who don't know what a Pan-Africanist is, a Pan-Africanist is someone who recognizes that no matter where you are on the planet, whether you are here in America, in the United States of America, North America, or if you're in South America, or if you are in Brazil, or if you are in Barbados, or if you are in Canada, wherever you are, as a Pan-Africanist, you recognize that anywhere where an African is, or a black man or woman is, by genealogy, culture, and experience, we're one family, we're one people. So that makes us a united front, a united force globally as a Pan-Africanist. That's what Pan-Africanism is about. Okay, as a black nationalist, what a black nationalist means, that means that you're someone who's here in America, who is interested in nationalizing or making nationhood for your own people. You recognize that we have enough numbers and enough history here to be a nation within a nation, to qualify to have something of this earth to call our own, land and territory, that we are able to control our own destiny, our own educational processes, our own economic processes. And yes, it is being done by other cultures. Okay, so that is what we are. We are revolutionary Pan-African nationalists. Okay, for those who may be confused about what the New Black Panther Party stands for and what it's about and what we're after, we're going to clear all of that confusion up with the help of our God and our ancestors and the truth. We're going to clear all of that up and cut through all of the fog, because we already know that we're coming behind a black liberation struggle from the 60s and the 70s that was cut off through the crack cocaine wars and the intentional flooding of dope into the ghettos of our communities, the hoods of our communities, where the black liberation movement was cut short. See, there's a lot of talk today about the Black Panther Party of yesterday, right? But they're not talking about how the Black Panther Party of yesterday didn't get to finish the mission. So when you talk about Black Panthers of yesterday, you know, from 1964, whether you're in 64, 65, or whether you're in 66 on down with Huey Newton, or whether you are whatever formation school of thought that you come from, the Eldridge Cleaver School of Thought, the Elaine Brown School of Thought, or the Huey Newton School of Thought, whatever school you're part, when you talk about pantheism, you're talking about a mission that was unfinished and then interrupted through the intentional scourge of chemical and really biological warfare targeted at our people through narcotics and through addiction. And so that interrupted the process that produced a whole bunch of addicted generations, where now most individuals you come into contact with today are addicted to some kind of pill, some kind of barbiturate, some kind of narcotic that they have to have. I don't care if it's nicotine, whatever it is. Most in this generation are addicted to something because there was an intentional flooding of the ghettos with addictive or additive substances, addictive substances that caused black people to become addicts and really exist in a zombie-like state. So when you judge the New Black Panther Party and you look at how the vacuum was created by the onslaught of COINTELPRO through J. Edgar Hoover and his FBI and all of that, and the vacuum that was created amongst black leadership from the 60s, and then you see the New Black Panther Party arise and awake in 1989, now you have a good understanding of the forces that are arrayed against the New Black Panther Party, because not only are we dealing with the same entities that challenged the legitimacy of the Black Panther Party and their right to organize in the ghettos and to feed hungry school children breakfast and put clothes on the backs of those that didn't have clothes and give the free shoes away and open the free medical centers and all of that. But we're also dealing now with an addicted society, a more addicted society that doesn't think properly, that isn't really thinking about being educated to a knowledge of self and culture and kind and things around them. A more addicted, even televisionally, generation that is fed what to think via television, fed what to think via radio, certain programs, fed what to think, and so it even through certain low-frequency hypnosis, fed what to think, okay? And so when you come here to this New Black Panther Party, you get a re-educational process. You are re-educated, number one, into your knowledge of self and who you are, first and foremost, That's something that even the Black Panther Party didn't get into in 1966. They stayed away from the African theology or ideology because they didn't want to offend, in many cases, the Peace and Freedom Party and those who they had white alliances with. Well, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad, when he became chairman of this organization, said squarely that the new Black Panther Party had to be based in African spirituality and African ideology. We couldn't be all over the map and all over the place. This day we in Mao, the next day we in Trotsky, the next day we in Marx, the next day we in Leninism, the next day we over here in this kind of manifesto. No, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad said squarely to keep your ideology and your focus on African spirituality and African ideology. And even if you want to look at it from a revolutionary standpoint, there's enough revolutionary history, even in Africa and even in indigenous lands, that we don't have to go all up into Europe and all into the white man's history to find out how to fight our oppressors. Now, that don't mean don't study. Of course you want to study. You want to read as much as you can read and intake as much as you can intake. Those that know me know I read all kinds of books and novels and watch all kinds of documentaries. But see, I have a base. I don't lose my base, my Black nationalist base or my Pan-Africanist base or my African theology. I don't lose that if I'm reading now. You know, I don't lose that if I'm reading, if I read Trotsky. I don't lose that if I, whatever, I don't lose it. You know, Abu Khaled Muhammad say that we so messed up that we could take 15 minutes of karate and then be in the mirror slanting our eyes. See, you don't want to be that messed up. You want to keep your base. And so that's the importance of having your program and keeping the Africa at the center of what you do. Because at the end of the day, Africa has to be liberated, and the African in you in the hills of America has to be liberated. So on our patch that was crafted in the early days by a man who's free now, former political prisoner, Brother Eddie Conway. Salute to you, General Eddie Conway, fresh out the belly of the beast, and a lot of political prisoners are coming home. You see the Panther not coming out of North America, not jumping up out of South America, not jumping up out of Mexico on our patch that says freedom or death underneath that. You see the Panther springing forth from Africa, right? And then springing forth into the world from the motherland, which was our throne. And we want to be clear that we are not landlocked just to Africa, but that we understand that the total breadth and scope of the planet belongs to the Black man and the Black woman. We are not landlocked in Africa, but Africa is our throne. Africa was our throne. Okay, the earth is our home. Africa was our throne. We ruled the entire planet as a people from our throne in Africa. All right, and so here we are. In the hills and smells of North America, a disconnected people from our throne, technically behind enemy lines, a kidnapped people, kidnapped Africans who have grown up here trying to make something of this existence, and we have had to fight, and many have had to bleed, and some have had to die just to get basic necessities. And we will have to do much of the same just to rid our communities of this scourge of violence that affects all of our communities. And I want to tell you, as I prepare to bring our national chairman on, that it won't be some overnight thing, so I don't even want you to get that in your head. This is a protracted struggle that we are prepared to struggle for and fight for. But we want to say that you have to start from the top on down, that you will not be able to look to a people who are deaf, dumb, and blind to necessarily help themselves. You got to start from the top on down. You got to put pressure on those that are making the laws, those that are making the policies, Those that are making the decisions, and you got to put your Black Power, Black Nationalist program to work to give it the right perspective and to get the right results. Then you come to your people with something to be able to help them with, all right? And so we're working from the top on down, and we're working from a grassroots level. We released the mission statement of the National Movement to Combat Violence. We want you to get that. If you are on the Facebook, you can see that on our page. It's on my page too, Sean Kwali on Facebook. We want you to get the mission statement and read the statement and understand what it is that we're doing and why we feel like at this time it is proper for us in the new Black Panther Party to take the lead in combating violence against our people. And we mean violence in every form. We don't just mean quote-unquote robberies and murder or assault and that type of thing. We mean every form of violence, from cultural violence to political violence to mental violence, psychological violence, moral violence, spiritual violence, economic violence, social violence, every form of violence that affects our people, we are engaged in combating that, especially at this point. We want you to get our 10-point program, whether you are members of the party or not, whether you are in a chapter or not. We want you to get involved with the 10-point program of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense and read that, because that speaks directly to you. That speaks directly to the Black existence and the Indigenous existence. We want you to read that and understand that and embrace that. And we want you to read point number 7, where we're speaking on ending Black-on-Black violence. We want an immediate end to Black-on-Black violence. We want an immediate end to police brutality and the murder of Black people. Okay, read that. Point number 7 of our program, and read the entire program, and then get our 9 local objectives. Okay, if you don't have that, just give me an email, nationalchiefofstaff@gmail.com. Send me an email, and I'll have that forwarded to you. Our 10-point program and our 9 local objectives. We want everybody in the United States of America, especially Black, to have that 10-point program of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense that speaks to what the basic needs of our people are and what position and program is in terms of what we are about and what we are after. And from that stems our effort to combat violence among our people. It won't be just us. Let me just say that. We don't even think that it'll be just us out there organizing. It's going to take all of us to organize. If you really care about stopping the violence and the criminality, transforming the criminal behavior that many of our people have adapted as survival mechanisms, you want to get involved in this work and in this mission. If you really care about ending the way that newscasters and media outlets broadcast negative images about the Black community, and that's all that you see on your nightly news and your evening news, you want to get involved in this work. If you really care about the way that resources are being taken from the Black community and there's not enough for our youngsters to do and not a lot of positive outlets for them to get involved with, and the monies that could be spent on properly putting resource in the predominantly Black areas of America, you know, if you care about that, you want to get involved in this work. We care about that. We are tired of seeing people protest and demonstrate about stopping the violence. Tired of seeing these T-shirts, these spray-painted T-shirts with rest in peace and these candlelight visuals and these balloons that are being let off in remembrance of someone who has lost their lives. Why? Because the establishment is greedy and operates off of a capitalistic principle, or the principle of capitalism, where money and the value of money and the acquisition of money becomes more important than the solvency of life. If you care about your people, now is that time. We don't have time to look back and talk about what Martin Luther King Jr. did. We don't really have a lot of time to look back and talk about what Sister Shirley Chisholm did. We don't have all the time in the world to look back and talk about what Minister Malcolm X did. It's about what we do right now. We can draw inspiration from all of them, and we should, and many more. Draw inspiration, study their moves, study their strategies, study their plans, but we cannot be ancestral junkies, where we're just on their jock so much to the point to where it's almost like hero worship or idol worship, but we're not doing nothing ourselves. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Shirley Chisholm, Harriet Tubman, all of them would curse us out. They seen us in this condition, and we did nothing for ourselves, nothing to change and fight the conditions that our communities are in. So you have to care about this. See, you have to care. If you don't care, you're dead already. You don't have to wait to go to the cemetery or get in a casket. If you don't care about what's happening with your people, you are dead already. You're mentally, morally, spiritually dead. And that's worse than a physical death. How can you look and see your people suffering from the East Coast to the West Coast to the North to the South to the Midwest and you don't care until it affects your immediate family? See, Pan-Africanists, we don't think like that. Black nationalists, we don't think like that. If it happens to one black man, it happens to all of us. If it happens to two black people, it's happening to all of us. You have to feel the pain of your brothers and your sisters. You have to feel what our people are going through and feel what you're going through. Because you're on an industrial plantation, an elevator plantation, and we're trying to get free. And you got some house niggas and some field niggas on the same plantation trying to either figure this thing out, or you got others that are trying to keep you enslaved and keep us incarcerated. Straight up. It's what time it is. And so from the top to the bottom, you got some entertainers waking up. You got some entertainers trying to stay asleep. You got some professionals waking up. You got some professionals staying asleep. You got some working class waking up. You got some that's staying asleep. You got some off the block that's waking up. And you got some that's steady asleep, and you have to go to work with what you have. Stop waiting on the perfect condition and the perfect time. You know, some people, they say that, you know, I would join the new Black Panther Party, but, you know, it's just I'm not all the way together yet. You know, I haven't got everything right yet. Listen, brother or sister, you won't never have it all the way together. Because here in the hells and smells of North America, it is not designed like that for a black man or black woman to always have everything together. It's not designed like that. You have to get involved in the effort of raising your people up. And at the same time, you will raise yourself up. That's the way that the law works. The universal law works. When you are selfless and you give of yourself, you bless and help others. Let me make sure I'm not cutting into our chairman's time here, because I want to make sure that he gets on and gets here. And if he is on, just press one, chairman. I don't want to cut into your time. But I just want to stress to you who are listening to me the importance of why we're doing what we're doing and why we're doing it at this time. Why are we fighting against violence when you've always heard us be so hard, you know, on the white man and white supremacy and the devil and all of that? And that's what you've grown, many of you have grown to expect to hear from us. And in truth, that's exactly what we're fighting. If you're fighting violence in your community, you are fighting white supremacy. Make no mistake about it. The violence in your community right now, today, is a result of automatic, systematic, remote control from 400 years of slavery, servitude, suffering, shame, and death under white supremacy in America. Make no mistake about it. It is interlocked and interrelated. The reason why Black people hate themselves and we hurt and harm ourselves is because we have been taught not to love ourselves. Our slave masters, our former slave masters and their children, the white man and the white woman, taught us not to love ourselves. That is a fact. And it is taught right now today institutionally in their classrooms that we started as slaves and that we always were at the bottom and that we always had to struggle. That's in the books. So make no mistake about it. If you're here to fight against white supremacy and you're here to fight against the racist power structure of America and all of that that you want to fight against, you have to still deal with the conditions of the Black community. We have to do exactly what the Chinese did. The Chinese, before the Chinese could have complete constructive change in their communities and in their nation, they had to deal with the opium trade. They had to push the opium trade out and eradicate the opium trade. They had to deal with the opium pushers first, internally, before they could ever get to a point to deal with their external enemies and deal with their external oppressors. See? So again, if we know that there was a systematic effort to put drugs in the Black community, non-quote-unquote regulated drugs in the Black community, then you have to organize against that effort, and we have to fight against that effort. Does that mean that we want you to, do something illegal and all of this? No, sir, no, ma'am. You don't have to do anything illegal. For you spies and informers and all you who's listening right now on the radio broadcast, we don't want you to do anything illegal out there in the Black nation. You don't have to do that. We want you to do everything right and exact. We want you to be on your square and stand on the truth. But you have to organize. You have to look at whatever's wrong in your community and figure out how to solve that. Simple as that. That's what organizing is. See, there's a difference between the rah-rah crowd, somebody that'll tell you a message and get you pumped up, and you say, go ahead, that's right, preach, and all of this and all of that, versus the ones that will organize away from the cameras, away from the fanfare, and will make a difference in somebody's lives. Back to the Black Panther Party of the 60s. Can you imagine, like tomorrow, when your children, those of you who have school-age children, if you didn't have food in your refrigerator, or didn't have enough food in your pantry, and you knew that when you woke up early enough and you went down to Panther headquarters, had breakfast ready for your child, what a difference that is. Okay, so the new Black Panther Party, we have to serve, and we are serving in the same way. We want to eliminate the scourge of violence against our people and serve the basic needs of Black people and oppressed people. And that main organizer is here, and he has the vision to carry us forward and to go forward. And I'm glad that he's here to be able to tell us what it will take to get this movement all the way up off of the ground and how this will catch fire all across the country. I want you now to prepare to receive and listen to our national chairman of the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, the General Minister Hashim Nzinga. Black power, sir.
All right, Black power. Let it shine.
Black power.
Here we go again. We got to keep meeting like this, brother. We got to keep. I know you have people saying we got to stop meeting like this. I'm saying we got to keep meeting like this on Black Power Radio.
Sure.
I'm here to say that the month of February is slipping away. I think we had one hell of a February. I think we did a great job of lifting up the name and the spirit and the continuation of a living legacy of the man. I don't think me and you will be on this radio show spending the money and all the time to help our people if he hadn't touched our lives. And that's the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad. And I'm on my way to sit with my big brother. I'll be eating lunch at this time and dinner at this time with him tomorrow night. We carried this thing for 12 years and we respect him all of our days. Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, former chairman of this organization, 12 long years. And we can never give enough respect, never talk about enough, or hard driving. Never sleep, never stop typing, never stop telling us about this thing called Black Power, a national chief of staff of the new Black Panther Party, Brother Sean Quali. Respect and we salute your hard driving and your dedication to this organization, along with the rest of the National and Central Committee, the regionals, the locals, and the brothers and sisters who are trying to figure out what this button and what this patch means. Black power to the Black Power Nation and the new Black Panther Party worldwide. And we're happy to be on tonight. And last but never the least, we thank God for every listener that tunes in to Black Power Radio to hope that your revolutionary dreams or your consciousness or your culture or the nature of what we have, what they call Black History Month, for every night and every month on Black Power Radio, we say Black Power salute. All right, Brother Sean Quali.
Yes, sir.
They say that the harvest is right, but they say on the other note, the workers are few. So on that topic, we'll get into what some people think is too many movies coming out. It's too much TV. Some people think we got a phone booth we go into, and we put on a Black Panther cape, a Black Panther uniform, and spin around and fly over the world and do super miracle work, man, super work, natural work. I'm here to say tonight, man, we got to make it plain. As Malcolm would say, we got to make it plain, make it simple. Our problem didn't start with the violence in our communities and the violence and the self-hatred against each other overnight. It was a very, very delicate plan that was carried out. And because of that plan, you get sayings and cliches like the sun sets and rises on the British Empire. That's an arrogant-ass saying. And as we said before, when we know England and Britain ain't the size of a quarter when you're talking about the universe and the world. These crackers were so arrogant that they say the sun rises and sets on the British Empire. That means anywhere you are under the sun, it's the British Empire. And in order to carry that out, they had to take over South Africa. And Shaka Zulu had to deal with it. And they still are there to this day. In order to do that, I think if you go back to Ghana, the gold state, and you visit the history of Nkrumah, you would have to deal with him winning the independence from the British. If you come to Jamaica, if you go and slip over to the Bahamas, you will see them white wigs on our black, beautiful brothers and sisters' heads. The tradition and the method and the plan of Britain. And so as we open up with that statement, we're saying that there's been some wickedness in low places, from the Belgian, from the Portuguese, from the France, from many others who influenced this world to think negative of our people. And they got so deep into the science and into the brainwashing and into the bestiality ways of slaughtering our people, taking advantage of our good nature, till somebody let them take the babies and enslave the babies and took the babies on a course for some 400 years. And they want to act like it's never happened. Nobody did it. And we're responsible for everything that goes on now in Black America in 2016. When we said 2016, Brother Sean, but if we would have said 1916, we would have been talking a different story. Just 100 years ago, a blink of an eye. There's people in the newspaper right now, Brother Sean, that died at 100 years old, 96, 97, who lived through it. 1996 about the black man in America. If you blink your eyes again, you would say 1816. Just 200 years. And you got historians on the university campuses as we speak today, this evening. They were teaching history at Yale, at Morehouse, at Spelman, at Clark, at Hampton, at Grambling, at SMU, at TCU. Today, at some of the fortunate high schools around the country, they were teaching black history because it's Black History Month. So when we blink the eye and we say 1816, that's 200 years ago, then we sure don't want to blink the eye again and say 1716. And then we go to 1616, 400 years ago. Well, if they was teaching black history, by the way, the European teachers, if they go to 1619, they would say the first 20 slaves were brought to Jamestown, Virginia. But you got in your archives, Brother Sean, as we stood in Jamestown, Virginia, as they celebrated the history of Jamestown, Virginia, and the coming of the slaves. And they used our brother James Earl Ray to narrate it, and I was there. But they continued, Brother Sean, to brag on the history, teach the history in the college, teachers in the high school, but there's no reparation. There's no recourse of the damage that has been done to the Africans in America. It's a joke to them when you get to the point where you're talking about reparations. What is that? Repairing the damage that was done. Somebody running in the back of your car, they're going to give you their State Farm card, Sean. They're going to pay for your car. Right. And if they broke your, if they hurt your back or broke your arm or hurt your child in the back seat, they got $100,000 to $1 million insurance policy so they can fix the damage that was done. That's the American way. It's strange. Today is a weird day for me because I had a sick daughter that I dealt with earlier today, and I had to contemplate leaving her, going to Washington to be with Brother Roland Martin in the morning and Attorney Malik Dulu-Shabazz tomorrow evening. But my word means something to me, and my family has suffered tremendously because of nights like this when we choose to leave a sick daughter, get on the road, lose a day of work, to put on a Superman cape, hell no. To do what God has put on our heart. And if God put it on your heart, you know your daughter's going to be all right when you get home. If God put it on your heart, you know he's not going to let you go do for others and not protect yours. not the God I serve. So we on this road. Me and my road dog, Brother Akbar. And we'll be what we're supposed to be. But today was a strange day because as I was sitting watching my daughter sleep, I was clicking through the news. I got tired of the news because it's so fucking man-manufactured and so depressing on purpose. And I stopped on one of these channels where they show the old movies, Brother Shaw. And it was a movie about Geronimo, the great Geronimo. And I came on the movie so perfect, it was like I prayed for God to show me something, show me why in the hell do I continue to put on this new Black Panther uniform year after year, month after month, day after day, when it brings so much pain, so much hurt, sometimes so much pressure. Somebody might say, wait a minute, Brother Hashim, I thought you loved that Black Panther uniform. But if they listen to us very, very close, Brother Shaw, they hear us talk about it all the time that this was a bloody stained suit. This was a suit you have to put out of the presence. This was a uniform you have to pull out of the grave. This is a uniform you have to pull out of Cuba and not in parts of Africa, and you gotta pull this uniform. It's a bloody stained uniform. That's why we get in our different moves and different modes, just to be honest to the Black Power listening audience, that we are human. We have a brain, lungs, liver. We have feet, hands. You just don't be born a revolutionary and start going at this white man ass the rest of your life. It's something that you develop through education and through a spirit that comes into you after you're educated. And it develops you into something that you don't know what in the hell you are sometimes. Because when you stand up against a white power structure that have been in place all of these years and that show you it would take your life for doing this work that we're doing tonight, Brother Sean. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Because I'm traveling, so I got to make sure we stay connected. But we're making it plain, as Malcolm said. Malcolm X wasn't born no damn Malcolm X. He was born Malcolm Little. That's doing what little boys do in his days and time. Ended up in a classroom and a white man told him, Malcolm, you can't be a lawyer. You're a carpenter. If you're a lawyer, your people wouldn't want to use you, and my people surely wouldn't. Malcolm, making straight A's, said to hell with school and walked out. Miseducation of the Negro should have been written in that classroom. So, Sean, while I was thinking about why we want to pick up a uniform that the original Panther Party don't even want to wear no more. They can talk naught. There's a handful of them that's doing good work. Most of them are running around on college campuses giving lectures, soaking up the sun, telling their story, writing books. But the revolution continues.
True.
While you and Emory giving a lecture across the street, black people are dying. What has changed? Sometimes we catch hell for wearing a patch that says freedom or death. But what makes me keep going, Brother Sean, is Patrice Lumumba caught hell. I'd be well when I read the whole story and Sir John the Truth caught hell. And we don't mention these names, Brother Sean, and Black Power Radio listeners, we don't mention these names to prove we know some names. And I hope you don't mention a name, just say a name. We studied these names, and we studied the souls and the spirits and we studied the pain, the suffering. We studied the long nights, the journeys that Sojourner Truth took. I'm in a vehicle moving 70-something miles an hour with a cruise control on with Akbar snoring. When we wake up, we'll be where we are.
Yes, sir.
These people walk, Brother Sean. Had pieces of a mule. Had an old wagon. Had an old can full of beans. No refrigerator, no ice pot. Took chances on food parties. Killed the food on the trail. Why do we keep putting on the pamphlet? Because Dr. King kept marching. They stopped him from crossing that bridge. He went back and crossed the bridge. They shot Medgar Evers. But James Murray was marching in Mississippi, and they shot him, and they came back and did it against spirit. Why do we keep putting on this Black Panther uniform, Brother Sean? Because there was a congressman who went through pure hell, but he overcame it, and he said, black is beautiful, baby. Why do we keep putting on this Panther uniform? Because Huey Newton laid on that hospital bed, handcuffed, not knowing if them people were going to stick a needle on him and take his life, hollering Black Power. We were because Bobby Seale walked into that state capitol with that shotgun. We were, man, because we can't let him bury little 17-year-old Bobby and not dig him from that grave every day.
Yes, sir. Brother Chairman, can you hear us? Trying to see. Okay, yeah. Brothers and sisters, our chairman will come right back. As he said, he's in motion, moving towards the next mission and the next objective. And you are listening live right now to the National Chairman of the New Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. Minister Hashim Nzinga, he'll call back in hopefully in a second. In order to ask him any questions that you may have, we want you to call 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447 to talk to our chairman live. I think he's back here with us now. Brother Chairman, can you hear us?
Sir.
Can't get our chairman in there. Yes, sir.
Now?
Go ahead, sir. Yes,
all
sir.
Right. I was saying that we wear this Black Panther uniform because Brother Mamira is in a Philadelphia jail on death row, and he's still doing radio shows and still talking to the people. We wear this black uniform because Brother Mikasa Rick still go in the Morehouse College campus unannounced, bust in a classroom, and say, Black Power. We wear this uniform because Brother Jamil Amin is locked down in Denver for the rest of his life, underground in a dungeon. We can't let him down, man. We wear this uniform because somebody has to do it, man. And with this uniform comes responsibility. And so I say, because I'm not slipping on you. I say I was looking at TV today, and I was looking at a channel, and the movie was named The Killing of Geronimo or something like that. And right when I turned it on, Brother Sean, there was three white men in Western dress looking like they were well-to-do white men, and they were talking about the indigenous people, which they call the Indian treaty with white America. And they say the damn treaty is going too good. Yes, it is. It's working out too good. I can't believe Geronimo put up with the treaty. They said, yeah, but we got people that found gold on the land that the Indians are on. And they done rounded the Indians up, moved them, gave them their own land somewhere else, did a peace treaty with them, and the Indians are going along with the peace treaty and these rich crackers, right before my eyes, say, we have to kill a white man. And the other white man say, why? Why would we have to kill a white man? We have to kill a white man. Why? And the other white man say, because if we kill a white man with one of Geronimo people arrow, make it look like the Indian killed him, then we can get the army to go to war with the Indians again. We got to get them off that land before we can get the gold. And the man who do the gold panning comes in the room, and they said, Mark, we're going to have to kill a white man. Mark said, why? We can't get to the gold with a peace treaty going on. With peace, we can't fight the Indians, and they on the land with the gold. But the gold is there. I know it's there. They said, Mark, do you agree we got to sacrifice a white man and act like the Indians done it? Mark said, of course, if that's what it's going to take to get the gold. They shoot this cracker Mark in the back with an arrow. And Mark looked at him dying, saying, I didn't know it was going to be me. He said, well, you're the only one been on the land. They take this cracker out by the land and dump his body, make it look like the Indians killed him. And the cavalry and the white people go crazy and go to war with the natives. Oh, Brother Hashim, Brother Hashim, what that story got to do with anything? That story tells you about America. They write their stories and they write their mindset, and they show it in Hollywood all the time. That's why Ford wrote the book, How the Jews Created Hollywood. 9/11, set up. Minister Farrakhan talk about a ship and the Spaniards, where they bombed the ship so they can go to war with Spain. So you don't think they'll come into your community and kill some brothers, but you can kill them? You don't think when the Bloods and the Crips have troops, they want to go kill a Crip or go kill a Blood or go kill a Vice Lord to keep it going? The story of Wayne Williams, when the Atlanta child murders was going on in the 80s, they started killing some of us and taking advantage of it. That's their nature. I'm going to get this brother on the show.
Yes, sir. Brother Chairman, you still with us? Can you hear us? Okay, his line dropped. He'll call right back in. Like I say again, the number is 646-478-4447. Bear with our chairman, he's in motion, and so you know sometimes them calls drop as he's moving and going up through them hills, and he'll be on Roland Martin in the morning. By the way, he'll talk about that. I think he's back with us now. All right, Black Power, sir.
This is one of. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Brother Shaw. This is
yes,
one
sir.
Of those nights. You know it ain't by chance that this is the last day of February, Black History Month, and we're dealing with this telephone. I just want to give my little Black History note that Frederick Jones did a transmitter and a telephone, and I thank God for Frederick Jones, because I wouldn't be able to talk to millions across the country, all the way to Africa tonight while I'm traveling, if it wasn't for Frederick Jones inventing that transmitter and putting it in that telephone. So let's get that Black History note and let's keep going, all right?
Yes, sir.
So, Brother Sean, I was looking at this Geronimo thing, right? And I was saying, man, look how devilish the white man is. So devilish, he do the devilish at work. Then he'll come back, put it in a movie, and show it to you. Then I thought about the Academy Awards, the Oscars, and all was going on. I thought about them trying to make a white man do Martin Luther King, the white man doing Egypt, the white man doing, they wanted a white man to play Michael Jackson. This man is just crazy as hell, man. You can go through 400 years of slavery. You can beat him at his own game. Then he come back. Now, he would feed his children from your slave black woman titty. He would call you ugly. He would say you're an animal. He'll say you stink. He would lynch you, burn you, sell you, do anything to keep away from you. But now all of a sudden he want to be you. Why a white man want to be Michael Jackson? Why a white man want to play Dr. King? Why a white man want to be King Tut? Nefertiti, or Nefertari, or Akhenaten? Because this white man has always been jealous of us and our melanin and our brilliance and who we are. And the only thing he could do is kill us. And when he couldn't kill us, and we beat him in all his games, then he come back and he want to confuse the world and be us and take our history and make our history, his history, a history that he say he hates. How can you win with somebody that psychotic, Brother Sean?
Teach.
And then he's so fucking psychotic, he teach your people to be fucking psychotic. I only been on Facebook like 6 months, you know. Some sister talking about Brother Hashim. Is like Flavor Flav. You out of your mind, black woman. Do we know it's a black woman at all? We just see a picture. That's what's so crazy about this social media and this Facebook and all this stuff going on. People can be who they want to be. She talks about Malik Zulu, and she talks about Hashim, and she talks about how we're actors or some entertainers. Or I don't know where her mind was going. And then when she's challenged, she go into knowing my wife Nefertiti's name. All of a sudden, she go into knowing my daughter Zakara's name. All of a sudden, she know a little bit more about me than just I'm some actor. Where did she get this information from? Who wrote this script? What it taught me today, son, is we must be getting effective finally.
That's right.
We must be on to something with this tour. We must be on to something because the white man monitor our show, monitor our phones, know everything about us. Why is he starting to make his move? I remember when we I went on CNN with Lemon and put the reward out for Zimmerman. Within 24 hours, I was in jail for 6 months. What is it about this beast when we start to move? It gets devilish. And it's, as Brother Jamil Amin told me, Brother Sean, and Black Power Radio need to listen to this close. Brother Jamil Amin told me, when I was under his teaching, they don't use no lion to kill a zebra. They use a zebra to kill a zebra because a zebra can see a lion a mile away. A zebra can smell a lion. So when they come in there, they're going to use somebody who looks like us. Let me say this to the Black Power Radio artists. They messing with the wrong one because I don't give a damn. I was made for this. I was built for this. I have put up this 26 years and black don't crack. I ain't never tried to be who I'm not. I'm not no saint. I'm not no preacher. I don't go around trying to act like I'm perfect. But what I do is fight for my people with everything I got. So anybody want to get into my personal life and try to take me off track, you're messing with the wrong one. This ain't no Bill Cosby affair. Everybody know about Malika, Zakara, Kainda. Everybody know about Hadia, my son, little H, my beautiful daughter, Marissa. And most people know I'm a single father raising my daughter. Most people know I was married in Dallas, Texas, to Geraldine Washington for 10 years. Got a divorce after me and Dr. Collie got shot up in Riverside. She couldn't take this lifestyle no more. Married Nefertiti. Was married to her 17 years. Queen Isley had the beautiful daughter, Kainda. Was with her 7 years and with her and Nefertiti for 5 years at the same time. That is what it is. I'm single now, don't like being single, and we'll be married soon to a beautiful queen. Soon. So you could play with me on Facebook, but you can't shake my faith, and I ain't goddamn ashamed of nothing that happened in my life. And I don't give a damn about the white man ploy and tricks. I keep my private life most of the time off these airways. But I don't give a damn if they come on these airways. Because I'm a black man, and I stand to be a black man, and I'm going to die a black man. And I try to treat people as they treat me. But I say this, for all of this to come up, Brother Sean, we must be on this song.
Mike yes,
Robinson
sir.
Told me there ain't no damn. And see, this is good teaching. That's why you got to be under John Henry Clark, Amos Wilson, Steve Coker, Dr. Naeem Akbar, Julian, and Nathan Hare. You got to study a Francine Cress Weldon. Peace be with her. You got to read Maya Angelou what a cage bird saying. You can't just look at Malcolm X's book. You got to go read Malcolm X's book. Because when you read Booker T. Washington book Up from Slavery, or you read The Destruction of the African Civilization, or you just don't pick up a Booker T. Washington book, but you read his speeches, you'll find out if you become a leader, you're going to go through some of this. You're going to be tested. You'll learn quickly that life is short, and the white man knows he can take you off course, or if he can get controversy started. That's how you end most of our great movements, man. So I'm telling the Black Power listener and organize and Panthers, keep your eye on the prize. And I'm telling you, don't you let no goddamn body tell you there's light at the end of the tunnel. Every fucking tunnel I drive in, Brother Sean, there's light in the tunnel. You ever been driving and just went into a dark tunnel? You'll kill your damn self.
Sure. That's right.
They want us to wait and see what's at the end of the tunnel. Talking about think out of the box. I don't think out of no damn box. It was a slave named after a box because he put himself in a box and mailed himself to freedom. That's the last damn box the black man needs to be in. They tell you to think out of the box because you have to have a mind. If you're thinking out of the box, you have to have a mindset that you're in a box. I wasn't born
That's
in
right.
no damn box. I was born out of Mary Washington's womb. Why are we doing what we're doing, Brother Sean? Because I put on my Facebook the other day a brother named Jesse Washington, who at 16 years old was burnt in Waco, Texas in 1916. Well, that was my uncle's brother. And my uncle named his son after his brother, Jesse Washington. In 1916, Jesse was burning stake on a tree in Waco with giggling-ass white people watching. And as he tried to crawl the tree to get away from the fire, they cut off his fingers and hand. In 1916, his brother was 14. He was 16 when his brother got 22. 6 years later, in 1922, he had a son named Jesse Washington. I mean, he named him after his brother. Jesse Washington in Waco, Texas, where Steve Washington was born in Waco, Texas. So when you go to my Facebook and you look at that picture of that burning Jesse Washington, and you ask me why I'm mad at the white man. The white man has burnt my people at stake.
Jeez.
And my uncle that named after him told me the whole story. And in Waco, Texas, you'll study a man named Doris Miller since it's Black History Month. I moved to Atlanta, Georgia with Savvy Miller. And if you go study the Atlanta Falcons, you'll look at a man named Junior Miller, who's really named Savvy Miller, who his uncle was Dory Miller, who was a hero in Pearl Harbor out of Waco, Texas. They want to act like we're detached from our history.
Right.
We don't be talking about reparations and black history just to talk about it. It is us.
That's right.
They talk about their history like it's yesterday. Talk about ours like his moons and stars away, you damn bastard. And got some niggas running around here wondering about people's children and people's relationships when we trying to fucking get free. Put your fucking ass in the trash. Get your ass in a garbage disposal and turn it on full speed. You're ready for the goddamn garbage. Just this month alone, Brother Sean, we done went on the air, and they want to know who killed Khalid. Who killed the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad? And I tell him over and over again, when I was with him, I watched him go through this same shit. Then you want to say the white man killed him. Oh, you niggas killed him with this nigger mess. Man that gave up his family, gave up his son, gave up his auntie, gave up his mama, gave up his brothers, gave up his life to fight for you. You sitting there want to fight when you feel the notion. You want to fight when they do the play roots once a year. You want to fight when you accidentally look at the news and it strike you wrong. You want to all of a sudden wake up and go see what the black fight is about. But your old Johnny let come lately ass.
Teach.
We do this day in and day out. Then you want to get up there and ask where we, who are we and all this shit. You don't know who we are and what we've done and where we've been. Then your ass need to get your head out of the damn sun. I mean sand. We ain't got nothing to prove to nobody, man. We're going up this road because God sent us up this road. We're doing this work because God put this work in us. We put this work together because we fear no man, man. We do this work because, Brother Sean, we want our people free.
That's
we
right.
Got a daughter, Brother Sean. We talk about her all the time. You don't want your daughter to go through no more of this damn nonsense.
Teach.
So when she see her daddy typing about getting free, do we know how to get free? Hell no. Hell the fuck no. If we knew how to get free, we'll already be free. But I tell you this. Every day God let me breathe this air, and it comes through my lungs. The energy that it gives me, I'm going to be trying to get free and get my people free, Brother Sean.
Yes, sir.
Me so too. We're going to go on this tour, and we're going to go city to city, state to state. We don't know how long it's going to take because we put a little fund me up, Brother Sean. We put a little fund me up, you know, a little fund me thing.
Mm-hmm.
We done got $131. $131 to do a Stop the Killing tour in 40 cities. If somebody want to get on the damn Facebook and say we entertainers, and we going to those cities, if you fund us or not. So you shut your damn mouth, and if you really want to get free, go to that damn fund me page to give us some money so we can travel this country and try to talk to our people about putting this $1.6 trillion together and freeing our goddamn selves. If you want to get free, get with us. And when you drop something on Facebook, say, hey, have y'all thought about the mental health? Hey, have y'all thought about Red Cross and the blood tampering that's killing our people? Hey, have y'all thought about they're studying our kids in fourth grade to see how many jails they need to build? Ain't that part of genocide? Hey, have y'all thought about they got court appointed attorneys that work for the state? And that make our people take plea bargains and fill up the jails that are now industrial camps. Ain't that part of stopping the killing? Ain't that part of genocide? That we can't be represented in court unless it's a state-paid lawyer who pays our case no attention? If you want to drop something on Facebook, why don't you drop, do you know we're dying at the rate of such and such because we're not eating right? Are y'all going to deal with nutrition on the Stop the Killing tour? Can I help? Can I help Brother Sean or Sister Amir or some of the Panthers? Or can I help Brother Ali? Or can I help Sister Khadija? Or can I help such and such put a package together on yoga and how we can do yoga and get rid of some of our anger and some of our stress? Ain't that part of stopping the killing?
Yes, it is.
So I'm saying to the Black Power Radio listener audience, Brother Sean, if you want to talk about revolution, complete constructive change, if you want to talk about a better tomorrow for your children, don't put the weight on Brother Sean. Don't put the weight on Brother Akbar or Brother Travis in Texas or Brother Ali in L.A. or Brother Ali in Tampa and that great force of Panthers or our New Jersey group of Panthers or Brother Durrell out in St. Louis or Brother Stokely out in Tennessee and the many, many, many other Panthers that I can name. Put the pressure on your damn self, because it's going to take all of us to get free. We're just doing what we feel that can help the struggle. And we bringing up something that may spark something in you. You didn't spark nothing in me. I sparked something in you.
Teach.
Just got off the phone with Brother Rick Ross. Told me anything he can do to go city to city or help us and talk about the gang banging and talk about the drugs and how they got them in our community and go over it from somebody who knows. Brother Hashim, let me talk about that on this Stop Killing Tour. I said, come on, Brother Rick, there's a spot in the car for you, brother. Could you imagine? I ended with this, Brother Sean, and reading the Thurgood Marshall book. Our first Black Supreme Court justice out of Howard University. He said the great Charles Hampton Houston, great lawyer, great attorney out of Howard University, great teacher, who taught Thurgood Marshall and who set up separate and equal and all them big cases, and Thurgood ended up getting the credit and handling them. But Thurgood Marshall was his mentor and teacher. Charles Hampton Houston was his mentor and teacher. He said, Charles Hampton Houston told him, you got to go south with me. Thurgood and him got in the car and went south. And his wife told him, if you're going south, we got to pack a lot of lunch because you can't eat at them white restaurants and you can't do this and that down south. Thurgood talks in his book about when he was down south and was eating his sandwich and pulled an orange out of his lunch sack. And a little black boy was no shirt on, no shoes on, looking at him eat that orange, looking at him look at the orange. And he felt so bad, he wanted the orange so bad, but he gave it to the little boy. And the little boy went to biting the orange with the peel on it and the orange up, Thurgood said. And Thurgood said, he ran to the little boy, you messing up this orange, and was talking to him loud. And Charles Hampton Houston called him over and said, Thurgood, would you ever think that maybe that's the first orange the little boy ever had? Thurgood goes on to tell a story about going into a city in Mississippi to help some brothers, and he got pulled over, and the police said he had alcohol on his breath. Thurgood said, you gotta be lying. I ain't had a drink for a whole hour. I'm saying, brother, they used to drive in them cars in them desegregated towns and risk their life, man, like I'm driving down this road today. And, man, when Martin Luther King and them would get pulled over, they would have to think like them three little boys who got pulled over, them two Jews and Cheney. They got taken to the police station. And the sheriff, not the Klan, the sheriff got them out. And the sheriff took them to the Klan. The Klan killed them three boys. So many stories, man. going down these highways and going down these roads back in the 60s and the 40s and the 30s. Now people came up dead and came up missing. So the reason we're going on the Stop the Killing tour, because we know our history, Brother Shaw. And now we get a young man driving on the highway, leaving Florida A&M, going home in North Carolina, have a car accident like Charles Drew in them Carolinas. God bless the man with a car injury and probably a head injury to make it to a white woman porch and ask for help. The white woman said, "A nigga on my porch," and the police came and shot the man, not in 1932, not in 1940. That happened in 2015 or 2014, Brother Shaw. These roads are getting like they were in the early 1900s. So when we go out and wake up our people on this tour, we hoping we spark something in people all over the country. And they might not do what we do. They might not do it how we do it. They might have a whole different method. But I hope, like I got touched one day by a Dr. Khalid Muhammad speech. I hope, like, I got touched and tampered thought by a brother named Lionel Costa. He showed me a tape of Minister Farrakhan speaking on Malcolm X 25 years later. He said, if you want to be like Malcolm X, y'all all want to talk about Malcolm X because he ain't here. He ain't here to put your ass to work. He said, but I was under Malcolm for 10 years. Malcolm was hard. Malcolm was disciplined. He said, I never seen Malcolm X late. Never seen Malcolm X eat for one meal a day. He said, I never seen Malcolm X wink at another woman. He said, so if you want to be like Malcolm, the first thing you got to do is start building the character of Malcolm. So I say, tonight in closing, Brother Shaw, Malcolm got some teaching from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Malcolm got that great book, The Message to the Black Man. Malcolm was with white prostitutes and with white women before he woke up. So there's a process. There's a process. There's a process to waking up, standing up, straightening up, and doing for your people. So if you see somebody trying to wake up, straighten up, and got a track record of trying to do for your people, you don't hinder them. You hope and you pray that they touch somebody, that they wake up somebody. That's the only way. We're going to win, Brother Sean. I hope my great grandkids one day pick up an old tape by their old great granddad. Say, my old great granddaddy played a little part in this thing that we call freedom. Black power, Brother Sean.
Black power.
Appreciate your patience and your time with me.
Yes, sir. You're very welcome, sir.
I got to sign off. Please get ready to talk to our people. We're rolling mud tomorrow.
Yes, sir. I was just going to ask you, tell us about it. That's at 7:30?
7:30 on the great Kathy Hughes. Great. That's a story in itself. If people just go study and read about Kathy Hughes and her family and how TV One and Radio One made it through so much hell. And they need our support. They need our support. But it's going to be on TV One, which is owned by the Hughes family, Sister Kathy Hughes, the great commentator. I mean, the great host, Roland Martin, who, as you know, I met in 94. No, I met him in 92. But he was one of the people who played a key part in Dr. Collins and my success in 94 on our tour in Texas. So for the people that say they ain't been in the street, I'm some actor. You ask Brother Roland what kind of acting I do. He's been knowing me for 20-some years. He can vouch for it. Old brother Hashi. But anyway, enough of that. We got work to do. We got to stay focused. But we are human, so every once in a while, we got to talk to our people like family. Family got to sit down and be family. But at 7:30 tomorrow, Washington, D.C., Black TV One, Kathy Hughes, my brother, Roland Party Show.
Thank you so much, brother Chairman. Thank you, too.
Never know who's lost. All right.
Yes, Black sir. Power. Black power, sir. Brothers and sisters, that's been our national chairman, the general minister, Hashim Nzinga, reporting live from the hells and smells of North America, crossing country in the roads, making his way to TV One to be with Brother Roland Martin. And you make sure that you tune in and find what time your local listings are for TV One, and find the News One Now show, Brother Roland Martin, and hear our national chairman live tomorrow. We'll be putting the information out via social media and other networks so that you can find it. And we want you to hear from our national chairman and to join in the struggle. You'll call this number, 347-903-0886, 347-903-0886. If you have email, email us at nbppphq@gmail.com, nbppphq@gmail.com, and leave us your information, and we will get right back to you to join the struggle and tell you how to do it. Take part in the national movement to combat violence against Black people. We want you to start local movements, as you just heard our chairman say, local movements in your city to combat and organize against violence against Black people. Local organizing committees to combat violence against Black people. More details on the way about that. Get the mission statement and circulate that. Again, 347-903-0886, nbpphq@gmail.com to join the movement. And I'm so glad that we were able to hear from our national chairman tonight, and so glad that you all honored us with your presence. Next week, by the grace of God, we'll be able to take your questions and your answers and get further into it, as again, every day this thing unwraps further and further. And we got to make the effort of liberating our people in a real way. Otherwise, we sentence ourselves to slavery, death, and shame. And so we thank you and look forward to many more of you coming forward to join the movement. Look forward to hearing from you this week. Salute to the new Black Panther Party, where you are. Hold the line. Keep the name, the banner, and the spirit of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad alive and well in the hells and smells of North America and throughout the world. And again, we say Black power to Black people, power to the people. And remember, if Black people are not free, nobody's free.
Pictures of you and Muhammad popping champagne at your going away to prison party, 'cause you got caught.
happen, the revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Gwyneth Paltrow being run out of Harlem on a Vespa with a brand new weave. There will be no slow motion or ass shots of Buffy the Body gyrating on a rented Rolls Royce with a wet black power t-shirt that she had been saving for just the proper occasion. Real Housewives, Olivia and French, and the Kardashians will no longer be so damn relevant. And women will not care if niggas are making it rain in puddles of sorrow, because black people will be in the streets looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no YouTube clips of parrots singing the national anthem, or Sweet Brown screaming she ain't got time for that. The theme song will not be written by Kanye West or DJ Khaled, nor will it be sung by 2 Chainz, Nicki Minaj, Taylor Swift, or Trinidad James. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a flash flood, flash fire, or flash mob. You will not have to worry about the gecko in your glove compartment, the tapeworm in your gas tank, or the Trojan man in your back pocket. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not spray on a darker complexion. The revolution